some turkey telling me that I ain't country.
A little more respect for the Lord and the law and the working man. If we could use a little peace and satisfaction, some good people up front.
You can't take me.
Are protected by the good Lord and a gun, and you might meet them both if you show up here not welcome, son. Our necks are burnt, our roads are dirt, and our trucks ain't clean. The dogs run loose, we smoke, we chew, we fry everything out here.
There'll be a party come this November, where we're gonna set things free. All good people gonna gather round, gonna show what made this country free. We'll run off the schemers and backroom dealers, so the red, white, and blue will prevail when we're holding a hammer. When we're holding a hammer. When we're holding a hammer.
Time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
And we've made it. I've been pushing buttons furiously here, trying to get everything going right, but I think we did okay. I'll check and see if we're getting any sound there in a minute. Welcome to the shooting bench. It is the day before Halloween, the 30th of October. Amy's favorite holiday here is Halloween. So, although we're not doing a whole lot this year with kids all gone and everything, we're not doing near as much as we normally do, but that's okay. All right, well, let me get over here to the chat room if everything's working right. Now the chat room's... No, I'm still having trouble. I know a lot of you have emailed me and everything about this recording problem I'm having. I haven't been caught up catching up with my podcast. DeTinker's helping with that. He sent me some of the archives there. So I'll get those downloaded and put on the, why do I have music playing here? Stand by just a minute. This is not supposed to be doing that. Okay, it's not doing it anymore. All right, where I was. All right, I'm going to go over and find the chat room. Thank you, Nan. She's in there, 5.5 by 5, 5.5, brother. Good to see you guys in there anyway. And to Tinker, thank you for recording this. I don't know what in the world is going on with mine. I'm trying to go over my settings. I might have to give you a call and have you walk me through this. I have not figured out what in the heck is not making this thing record. I'm still not doing it. But like I said, for those of you that are threatening to draw and quarter me and nail me to the cross and all that kind of stuff, just hang on for just a little bit longer, and I'll get the ones uploaded that the Tinker sent me. All right. I saw Nan posted a deal earlier, 43 degrees in Fort Mojave, Arizona. She said, brr, and I said, LOL. Really? No, 43 degrees is not brr, unless you're standing out there in wet shorts and the wind's blowing. But Burr is a little closer to what we... I'm going to tell you a story about Burr here in a little bit. But it was 12 degrees when I woke up this morning. And a little bit of breeze out there. And it was definitely not the weather for a pair of wet shorts. It was a little bit frosty this morning. But not as frosty as it was in a place in Utah. I don't know if you guys saw this story or not. But There's a basin, a sink, they call it in Utah. There's a basin or a series of basins there. And I'm not sure exactly what town it's closest to. But they have set an all-time record low for the continental United States since records have been kept. As of, I think it was yesterday or day before, I can't get the story to open here, but it was very, very recently, just in the last few days, it was 35 below zero, negative 35. That is almost 70 degrees below freezing, right at it there. So, yeah, we didn't want to go to that part of Utah right now. Let me see. I just got a message coming in. Let me see if we got something going on. Okay. Nope, that's not it. What was that one? Okay. Let me see. And I'll have to answer that later. We have a technical problem with a guy trying to fly into California with a handgun. And the thing is, he's taking a Gen 4 Glock, and as I understand it, Gen 4s are not allowed in California because they have not been blessed yet by the powers that be. So until they get their blessing, he may have to take a different gun. All right. Where'd that story go? Hang on here a minute. There it is. There it is. Logan Canyon. There's a sink in a place called Logan Canyon, wherever that is. 35 below zero. It said the record may not last long because tonight, Wednesday night, they're expecting another all-time low record. So we'll see what happens tonight. I know it's pretty chilly out there right now. It was about 20 a while ago when I walked by the thermometer outside. It said the monitor at the bottom of the sink or at this basin took the minus 35 degree reading at approximately 6:15 Monday morning, breaking a more than 100-year-old record of minus 33 set in 1917, October 29th, 1917, in Soda Butte, Wyoming. So the record for all-time low for the United States since records have been kept is now officially 35 below, which may be beat tonight. So, needless to say, I don't believe we're going to Logan Canyon sink area tonight. We'll just we'll stick out our 12, 14 degrees here and pretend like we like it. This guy says it's that's our concern for Wednesday morning. If it's windy, it may be only about 15 below, but if it gets calm, it could go to 40 below or somewhere in that area. So apparently the wind is, I guess, this just a few hundred yards difference from the top of this sink to the bottom. But the cold settles in the bottom of that thing, and apparently when the wind blows, it mixes up the air enough that it, you know, it ruins their low temperature reading. But if it gets still and that air settles into the bottom there, I guess it stays pretty chilly. 51 and raining, Doc says. Well, 51 degrees when you're wet is not very warm, I can tell you. It's not 12 degrees, but it ain't warm. I think I've told you guys before, one of the coldest coldest times was actually in Atlanta, Georgia. It got down to 4 degrees. It was spitting rain, heavy humidity, and wind blowing probably 25, 30 miles an hour. And to be that wet and that high humidity and the rain and the wind and all that, it was absolutely bone chilling. And that was one of the coldest times that I can ever remember. I've been in a whole lot colder weather, but that was pretty miserable. Doc, if I was still reloading, I've got a ton of 12-gauge hulls, but, man, if I was still reloading, we used to load double A's all the time, loaded thousands and thousands. When I was shooting a skeet, you know, three or four times a week sometimes, it was we went through double A's. We'd load them till we couldn't load them anymore and then go get some more. Pumpkin Cat's got it pretty bad too. 40 degrees and raining there. So, yeah, it's a damn global warming. I hate it. No, it's just too much. All right. Got a couple of stories here, and then I gotta reach back over into last week or Monday and pick up a couple of those. So here's what's happening in Pittsburgh right now. And I hope that gun owners and legislators will pay attention to what's happening here. As of, today, this story came out this morning. A judge has kicked their assault weapons restrictions, kicked them out and said it's unconstitutional. You can't do that. Exactly, he didn't say it's unconstitutional. They just said it's against the law because there's a state preemption law in Pennsylvania, just like there is in many states, that prevents the lower political subdivisions, municipalities and counties, whatever, to make any gun law that is, contradictory to state law. Anything more stringent than state law. So Pennsylvania as a state has not banned these assault weapons, but Pittsburgh did. And the judge says, no, you can't do that. So now I don't know how that works exactly, because usually when a judge says something, people will say, well, okay, that must be the law. So they... Now, I don't know what Pittsburgh is going to do, because just because a judge says that from the bench doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they have to do. That is legislating, you know, ruling from the bench. Just because they make a rule doesn't mean they turn it into law right away. So we'll see what Pittsburgh does with this. New Mexico tried that, and back in 2002, and there's a state preemption law in New Mexico that says no county or city can, how do they put it? Anyway, they can't make any law, any contradictory to state law. But they did anyway, and when the concealed carry law came out in 2002, it was supposed to be effective in on January 1st, 2003, as I remember. And anyway, the city of Albuquerque said, no, hell no, we're not going to do that. The mayor there said that they raised enough hell that they got it delayed. And I'm not sure why, because the law was clear and they didn't change anything. They didn't have to do it. All they had to do was say, no, we can't do that. And that's basically what they did, but it took them a few months to do it. I'm not sure why it took that long. But anyway, the Dan, 18 below in Pennsylvania, they said. Now, I'm guessing that Nan's house probably didn't have the greatest insulation in the world or something there, because at 18 below, it shouldn't have been 18 below in the house. That's a little chilly. But, you know, I got a notion that this winter, I may have told you this, I think this winter might be a dandy. We're getting these record lows up in Utah and everything, and seeing snow, you know, all over the country, a lot of places in the country right now. And they even threatened us with a little snow here tonight, but I don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, just a little skiff, but I don't think we're going to see it. And it's not unusual. I mean, it's actually pretty common for it to snow, you know, around Halloween here, and you know, it's over in Luna and over in there, and it snows pretty regular by Halloween. Nan said, I guess the oil furnace went down. Okay, I didn't get the whole thing here. Sorry about that. Yeah, when the heat goes out, I get it. I can understand that. So, electric blanket be a handy thing. So, you know, that's the deal with fireplaces. Or I shouldn't say fireplace. Fireplace is okay. Airtight wood stove, that's where it's at. You run out of fuel oil and the furnace quits working, then light the fireplace. You run out of electricity and your pellet stove quits working, then you can light the fireplace, light the wood stove. Power goes out and your electric heat, you know, natural gas disruption of some kind, and you don't have any, then you light the wood stove. The wood stove is a backup. You've got wood out in the yard, and I don't care how much work it is. I don't care how dirty it is. I will never, ever, at least I have no plans of ever living anywhere without a wood stove. I've had one for years. I don't remember the last house I lived in that didn't have a wood stove. It's been a long, long time. And it's a backup. Even if you have other heat that you'd rather have or that's cleaner and nicer and stuff, okay, you want to do that, that's fine. I don't care. I don't mind splitting the wood. I don't mind sweeping up the wood chips around the stove and all that, but I do mind being cold. I do mind having to sleep in my Carhartts under an electric blanket. So that's why we have a wood stove. And if you get a wood stove, make sure that you get one that's, and most of them are these days, they're called airtight. They're not like the old Ben Franklin wood stoves or anything like that, that you just close the cast iron doors on them and they still suck a lot of air in there and waste a lot of wood and all that. You need to be able to control that, and the only way to control it is if you have an airtight stove. If the doors have seals on them, rope seals, where when you close the doors tight, it shuts off the air. And our stove will almost go out when you shut it completely down. It'll keep burning, but it keeps burning very low. And you open the damper, and it burns faster. And if you crack the door a little bit and open it, then it really gushes out there and wastes the wood. But nevertheless, it is our sole source of heat. And all we got to do is walk out in the yard and grab an armload of wood and keep it running. I am a firm believer, and have a very fond affection for airtight wood stoves. My first experience with that was in St. Mary's, Idaho. I'd been around wood stoves a little bit. I had a fireplace my whole life when I was growing up, but I didn't know what an airtight wood stove was until I had moved into that house in Idaho, and it had a great big, what they call it, earth stove. And, hell, you could put a half quart of wood in that thing. It was a big old stove. Yeah, it wasn't that big, but anyway. And after I learned how to run it and what it was all about, I said, boy, this is a cat's meow right here. This is where it's at. I was way pleased with that thing. Okay, let's move on here to bigger and better things. Before we go back over and change pages, let's get this one here out of the way. There's a dirtbag, a politician here out of Arizona here, believe it or not. Breaks my heart. But this story's a couple of weeks old, but I hadn't heard about it yet. There's a guy, he is charged with he's a legislator. What was he? I forgot his job here. But at any rate, he has been running a human smuggling scheme. What he was doing was getting pregnant women from the Marshall Islands, where he actually served a mission. And since he spoke the language fluently and all that, he'd get these pregnant women. He'd give them $10,000 to come to the United States, have the baby, and fill out all the paperwork, leave the baby, and go home. Then he'd take and adopt this baby out to someone that was looking for a kid, and for just somewhere between $25,000 and $40,000. So he's making a pretty good paycheck there. Over a period of about 3 years, he said he'd involved some 75 adoptions. So if he was making, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of $20,000 each adoption, that's a decent check. I don't care what anybody says. Let's see, what is that? That is $1.5 million. Now, there was other things going on because he'd said he'd had some other, you know, had pretty good sized bank account there and a big house and all that. But now the governor says that he should resign from his elected position. I guess he is, I don't know what his title is, but he determines the taxable value of property in Maricopa County, which is down where Phoenix is. And I wouldn't suggest to him that he resign. I'd run his ass off. That's of course, he's an elected official. I guess it's not that easy, but anyway. So that's the dirtbag story of the day there. Let me go back over to yesterday's list of stories here. I sure wish this, thanks to the Tinker, I wish my thing was recording here, but with the Tinker's diligence, maybe I'll get some of those downloaded tonight and get the podcast caught up. I want to apologize to all those that have emailed me looking for satisfaction here. Okay, let's see here. You know what? While I'm looking and rearranging things, let's do this right quick. Anyway, but I do like some of their music. Since we're not paying for it, we can listen to it a little bit once in a while. If we had to pay any money for it, we wouldn't be doing it. I'm not interested in spending any money on them. So as we look at some of the new stuff we got here, something else I want to say about a wood stove, and I noticed there are some of you in the chat room have wood stoves, but if you're contemplating getting one and you're thinking about getting wood for it and everything, let me give you a few little hints here about wood. Stay away from anything that's not fully seasoned. There's one exception to that.
Time for the Ebola breakout, that's right. Hey, you know what? I got
why do we have this? All right, let me stop this. Dang. Let me rearrange this here. See if I can stop that. There we go. All right, let's try this again. There may be other exceptions in the country I don't know about, but if you live in a place where you have juniper or cedar, they are it's fully, absolutely 100% usable when it's completely green. It can be green, healthy, growing. You can go out there and cut it down and put it in the stove, unlike most types of wood. Most of them, you know, hardly burn at all, and some of them will, but they smoke a lot and don't put out much heat until it's seasoned. But juniper is one of the, if not the only exception to that. We burn a lot of that. Two different kinds of juniper. For those of you who live in juniper country, you probably already know this. But actually, there's several kinds, but there's two major kinds in this part of the country. That is shaggy bark juniper, which is what most people call cedar trees. It's not cedar, it's a juniper. And shaggy bark has, just like the name says, it's got shaggy bark. You can kind of pull it off by the handfuls and roll it around in your hand and make good kindling and tinder out of it. Nan, stand by just a second and we'll get to that. Yeah. It splits really easy. As a matter of fact, when I was in Idaho, that's one of the things I did, is split cedar rails. I'm sure I've told you that by now, but we'd take 8-foot-long pieces that really was cedar. The cedar and juniper are closely related, but these were tall, big cedar trees. But same thing. It would burn, you know, just as well. But it splits real easy. It's extremely rot-resistant and bug-resistant. And it's good wood for a lot of things. Now, it's not the shaggy bark juniper will leave tons of ash. It burns pretty hot and it lights real easy, but it doesn't last as long as the alligator juniper. The alligator juniper has a much different bark. It looks like the back of an alligator, and it lasts longer, burns just as hot, smells just as good, splits just as easy, but has probably a third or less of the ash. Now, Dan asks if it had no pitch. No, it has no pitch. It's not like spruce or fir or pine or pinon or any of those. It doesn't have any pitch. I say it doesn't have any. It bleeds a little bit, and it's got some sticky stuff. It's a pitch, I guess, but not like the pines and the spruces and firs and stuff. And you can literally just take an axe and chop a chunk out of it while it's growing and light a fire with it. Just as well as any fully seasoned dried wood, better than most. We've taken cut down trees. I guess it was 3 years ago. A guy here, a neighbor of ours, he's, I don't know if I say neighbor, he's 10 miles up the road. But, he said, there's a great big one out there. He just gave it to us. He said, no, you can have that one right there. Just get it out of here. And it was still alive, and we cut it and brought it back and burned it that year, you know, as soon as we got it back. It's amazing that it works that way. But avoid wood that's not fully seasoned for the most part. Avoid wood that is starting to rot. It will eventually burn. But why, unless you're dying, freezing to death, don't burn that stuff. It doesn't put out any heat. And, I mean, you have to practically sit on it to feel the heat that it's putting out. And causes a lot of ash and sometimes doesn't stay lit very well. So stay away from any of that. You can tell by looking at a lot of it, if you can take a split and maul or an axe and just sink it in there, you know, 2 or 3 inches it's probably starting to rot more than likely. But let's see. The doc said, I guess he's got a cast iron grate on top of the stove. Not sure how that works. And cast iron grate on top of the stove to help season wood. That's interesting. The pines and spruces and firs, the pines probably the worst of those, pines and white fir. White fir is not a bad wood, it's just not great. It's not real hard, but it's okay, and it's better than nothing. It's better than rotten wood, and it's better than aspen, but aspen's pretty soft, burns up pretty quick. When it's seasoned well, it does okay, especially in an airtight stove. You put it in a fireplace and it burns up too fast. Or if you put it in a wood stove that's not airtight, it burns up pretty fast. But in an airtight stove, and you try to leave as much of it round as you can and not split, if you get the smaller pieces, it burns okay. Red fir, much, much better than white fir. A little bit of pitch in those, but not much. And both of those, the red fir's quite a bit better. And but any of those, any of your conifers, I guess, coniferous trees. And I'm not sure, I don't think juniper falls into that category. I should say coniferous trees with needles, any of the ones with needles. If you keep your damper turned down low all the time and put that wood in there, eventually you're going to have some creosote build up in your stovepipe. Sooner or later, you're going to burn your house down. That creosote will start building up, and then you build a big, big hot fire one time, and that creosote will start smoldering up in there, and you'll notice your stovepipe getting hot or getting red. And a lot of times it may be too late, you know, or you may not be able to notice it because the stovepipe goes through the ceiling into an attic or into another room before it goes out the roof. And it can definitely start a fire. Many a house has been burned down from not cleaning that stovepipe. Now, if your stovepipe is straight and doesn't have a crook or a dog leg in it, you know, two things. One of them, it's real easy to clean. Just go up the top, take the cap off of it, take the length of chain, like 5/16 chain or something, however long your stovepipe is, drop it down in there, hold on to one end of it, and just kind of wiggle it and whirl it around a little bit while that chain spins around inside. It knocks all that stuff out and sends it down into the stove. You just shovel it into your ash bucket and get rid of it. But an easier way than that, if the stovepipe is straight, get up every morning, build a good hot fire, open the damper up, and get a good hot fire going in there for, you know, for 20 or 30 minutes. And we've lived in this house now for 6 years. I've never cleaned the stovepipe once. When we lived in Luna for a year and a half, never cleaned the stovepipe once. The house we had in Farmington before that, never cleaned. I cleaned it one time in, 3 years? Because it had a dog leg in the middle of it. It had two little bins, and it was two stories. So it was, that smoke had cooled off quite a bit, you know, and the heat wasn't heat anymore by the time it got up there. So it did build up just a little bit, and I just took a chain, dropped it down in there, wiggled around a little bit, knocked all that stuff out, and that was the end of that. But other than that, I'm not going to tell you there's no need to, because you'll not do what I tell you. You'll burn your house down, and you'll be mad at me. But I'll tell you what we do, what I have done for years, many years. Since I lived in Idaho in 1986, I've cleaned the stovepipe in my house that I owned one time, and that was in Farmington. And I've had an airtight wood stove ever since then, almost the full time. I guess that's all that I can think of. There's cottonwood's pretty good burning wood. It's harder than hell to split. Birch is much like aspen, very similar in qualities. The cottonwood is you got to make sure that it's dry, because even though it doesn't have the pitch and stuff that the coniferous trees do, it will soot up your stovepipe if you're not careful. So that's I don't even know why in the world I got off on wood stoves, but it's just one of those things. This felt like talking today, so that's what I did.
I'll be back.
Glad we could be of some help for you there. Okay. Man, that was, I'm going to be a little slow, just in time for the Ebola breakout. That's right. Hey, you know what? I got to go find something for you here. This was what timing that my very oldest daughter sent me today. And believe it or not, I was on the phone at the time talking to a guy that had ordered he's a regular anonymous. He's never signed in, and I didn't know this until today. He said he listens quite regularly, talked about several things back in the day, and he is a fan, and I'm glad of it. But he listened here for the last couple of days and saw the reasoning of getting involved with colloidal silver. And I am not going to go off on a big long rant again on colloidal silver, so don't fret. But we have a breaking story that is making the scenes today. It's actually from a couple of days ago. But it's funny that she posted this there for me as I was on the phone with this guy that ordered one of my books and a silver kit. What it says, and this lends so much credibility to what I've been telling you for 10 years. Efforts to bring natural Ebola treatments to suffering West Africans have been squelched by the World Health Organization, which recently blocked multiple shipments of nano-silver solution measuring at 10 parts per million from entering the region, leaving thousands to suffer needlessly. World Health Organization officials also reportedly called off a trial at an Ebola isolation ward where local health authorities were set to begin administrating the silver. Now, this comes from Natural News. Natural News usually has pretty reputable stuff. U.S. government previously, let me start over. WHO officials also reportedly called off a trial at an Ebola isolation ward where local health authorities were set to begin administering the silver, which the U.S. government previously demonstrated is highly effective against Ebola. WHO ordered the trial not to proceed despite the fact that it had earlier voiced support for experimental treatments. Both WHO and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have given their blessing to experimental therapies for Ebola, citing a lack of proven treatment options. But when it comes to using therapeutic silver, it seems like all bets are off. According to the Natural Solutions Foundation, efforts to ship nanosilver into Sierra Leone have thus far failed. How stupid is this? If you could send monkey pee in a jar mixed with beeswax or something and told them that it worked, why not try it? These people are dying by the thousands over there or whatever. And why would you not want to try that? Well, let me tell you why you would not want to try that. Because I think that all these stories that we've heard over the years of population reduction are coming to fruition as we sprecken right now. The organization has been trying to deliver a shipment of 200 bottles of nanosilver, 10 parts per million, and 100 tubes of nanosilver gel to no avail. At this point, the shipment has been returned to the U.S. for the third time. That parcel shipped Air Express at a cost of $3,400 to Sierra Leone on August 20th, never made it out of Paris. Air France has yet to find a reason for that, but it made its way back to the U.S. again, apparently for the third time, without being delivered to Africa. People are dying and bureaucrats are still playing politics with silver. Formerly classified documents obtained from the U.S. Department of Defense reveal that antimicrobial silver solutions, like the kind NSF is trying to deliver Africa, have proven benefits in fighting Ebola and other forms of hemorrhagic fever. Research conducted by the DOD and several other federal agencies back in 2008 confirmed this, though health regulators largely ignored it. That's because they'll go out of business if they use this stuff, or if they say, oh, they just get on and say, well, we've lowered our staff to 5 people. All we need them to do is answer the phone. When somebody calls and has a problem, we just tell them to take colloidal silver. Do you think they're going to do that? When they're making billions and billions of dollars on the crap that they pump into you? Answer? No, they're not. A presentation entitled Silver Nanoparticles Neutralize Hemorrhagic Fever Viruses, which revealed exactly what its name suggests, was buried and kept secret for years. In essence, investigators determined that simple silver solutions neutralize viruses like arenavirus and filovirus, both of which are related to Ebola. Interestingly, the search was conducted with the backing of DOD's Defense Threat Reduction Agency and the U.S. Strategic Command Center for Combating Weapons of Mass Destruction. The presentation was given by researchers from the Applied Biotechnology Branch, 711th Human Performance Wing of the Air Force Research Laboratory. Now, let's back up one sentence here. Interestingly, the research was conducted with the backing of DOD's Defense Threat Reduction Agency and the U.S. Strategic Command Center for Combating Weapons of Mass Destruction. What has your faithful and humble host been telling you for 10 years? Those of us that have silver in our bodies, when faced with a biological attack, will have a better chance of surviving than those that don't. I've been telling you that and telling you that for a long, long, long time. But not a single mainstream media outlet reported on the presentation, and to this day, its findings have been largely ignored by establishment health authorities. Sadly, this political quagmire, nanosilver, is an obvious threat to pharmaceutical interest, and thus is being marginalized, is resulting in thousands of needless deaths in West Africa with no end in sight. And then it goes on to tell you that you should, the NSF is calling for 10 million people to write their representatives and demand that clinical trials be conducted on nanosilver and in Africa. The group says doctors and nurses need the silver to protect themselves, and patients need it to overcome the disease. Recommended dosages for each application are available at the following link. At the bottom of this page, you can contact your representative. Okay, let me see here. The following link. Let me check and see what recommended doses are here. Give the doctors and nurses nanosilver to protect them. 2 bottles each, 3 caps full per day. Okay, that's roughly, I don't know how big caps are, but I'd say that's roughly what we do. So, there you go. There's, lends just that much more credence to what we've been talking about the last couple of days. Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Okay, let's finish this up here. I'm not going to get into the silver thing. You guys have heard me harp on that for Lord, I don't know how long. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but I am going to spend a few minutes though on that little Ruger PC9. I haven't really had the time to this sheriff thing is keeping me pretty tied up between that and trying to keep the lights turned on, food on the table, and all of that. So, but that little Ruger PC9, the little carbine, is the neatest little gun. It has rapidly become my absolute favorite go everywhere with me gun. It's not as light as I'd like for it to be. It's heavier, quite a lot heavier than a 10-22. It's probably almost as heavy as a loaded AK with a 30-round magazine in it. Maybe not quite. But it's very sleek and well balanced, so it's easy to carry, even though it's a little heavier. And the fact that it uses Glock magazines and everything just makes it such a neat, obvious little, obvious choice for taking with you just for, incidental trips. You know, you're not going hunting, you're not going in, you know, you're not really expecting anything. You just want to take a long gun with you. It's pretty handy. Now, it will easily, very handily shoot inside, inside 2 inches at 50 yards, and that's without optics, just with the, I'd probably do better now with somebody with better eyes than me, but, even my 63-year-old eyes, just from setting, you know, on my butt 50 yards away, has, it does really, really well. So I'm hoping to be able to spend some time with it here in the next, I can't tell you when, because we just, this next 2 weeks is crazy. We've got so many things going on. We've got meet and greets and town halls and going to dinner at other places. We've got people coming for dinner over here. And just a million things happening here for the next 2 weeks. But as soon as that slows down a little bit, I'm hoping to sneak away and spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours out there with that thing with different types of loads at different distances. And I may even pop a scope on it just to see how it does. I didn't buy it to have a scope with optics on it. To have a carbine with optics on it, I just want to try it and see what it'll do. I'm curious to see, what the gun is actually capable of, and I'm going to need to, to put some glass on it in order to do that. But don't let the suggested retail price of those things scare you away. They're not hard to find for less than $500, you know, $440, $460, $480, somewhere in there. And it comes with, as I've told you before, it comes with two magazine wells. One of them, it comes with, when you buy it, it'll come with a Ruger magazine well installed in it. And I don't remember which Ruger handgun it is. That I think it's the PC9, but I'm not for sure about that. But you pop out two screws, put the other magazine well in it, and it shoots Glock magazines flawlessly. Have not had any problem with it so far. Well, I haven't shot it a whole lot yet either, but thus far I've had not a single hiccup out of it. So if you're looking for a little lightweight, well, good shooting carbine, you know, think about that. They've got them in a 40 now. I want to try to get one of those at some point. And if they make one with a 10 millimeter, then yeah, I'll be done. That'll one on. Once I get that one, I'll need nothing else. Cause I love the 10 millimeter. I love the 10 millimeter. Love it. Like it a lot. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. Well, I've had just about all the fun I can stand here, so I'm gonna get on out here. Halloween is tomorrow. If you, one of those that, as you should, I know some of us, we don't like the kids coming up to the door and all that, but, you know, we make jokes about it and everything, but, you know, when I was a kid, it was a big deal. We got to go out and have fun. It's just become so dangerous and so many people. So we like to be that one house, even though we're off the road, nobody can see us. We like to be one of those that, you know, come up and do the trick or treat thing and give the kids some candy and give them a little bit of joy for a short period of time. And it's just turned into such a mess out there anymore that it's hard to do that. But anyway, Halloween coming up tomorrow. You know what the day after that is? The 1st of November. And that means that there will be 2 months left in the year 2019. Unbelievable. Okay, well, I'm going to scoot, and we'll see you all back here. I have no reason to believe. I'm not sure if we got anything going on Friday or not. Stand by just a minute. Let me look at my calendar, see if we're going to be here for Liberty Lounge or not. Friday will be the 31st. It'll be the 1st, right? Yeah. So I have nothing on my calendar here, so as far as I know, Liberty Lounge will be on as scheduled and as promised Friday at its regular time. If anything comes up, I'll put it on Facebook and I'll put it on the chat room so you guys don't sit here waiting for me all night. Okay, it's rambling time, so I'm going to get out of here. We'll talk to you all Friday.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster.
Well, that wraps up another edition of The Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for The Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No explanation, no reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all.